101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty. In studio, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. A little bonus today. It's not the Ask the Mayor, but a little bonus today. Thanks for coming out.
Oh, my pleasure.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. It's going to be a great weekend.
Yes, it is. I'm looking forward to it. Start with, well, first of all, City Council had their meeting on Friday, so it's kind of quiet today.
It's a bit of a dead government plaza this week, I would say. And we're closed tomorrow and Friday.
Of course. Okay. Let's talk about the city bond rating. What's happened? What can we do? Where are we?
Late Monday afternoon, we got the Moody's report, which downgraded our bonds and included a negative thing. And there are three things driving that. And a couple of them we can't do anything about, and a couple of them, and one of them we can. We have been under a sewer consent decree since 2014.
Right.
And it turned out to be impossible to comply with, in terms of both time and in terms of what we were doing. It was supposed to cost $350 million. We've spent about $600 million, and we're...
And still not close.
And we're still not close. Right. So we have been, for my entire term, we have been in negotiations with the Justice Department and the EPA to get some relief from the consent decree. And we're supposed to have completed it by the end of next year. So it is not going to happen.
And it's ultimately going to cost as much as $1.5 billion? Is that still accurate?
Probably close to $1 billion.
Okay.
But that's anything that has a B in front of it is
scary.
A big number. Mm. It is scary.
Still a big number to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, M is a big enough number, but B is a really big number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have been negotiating. We have made a lot of progress. We haven't gotten to the finish line. I was hoping to have an agreement by the end of this year, and then we had they had 43 days off, so kind of stopped that. We have excellent outside counsel that is advising us. I am confident that we will have significant relief. The question is, how significant is that relief? And because of the uncertainty of that, one of the major factors, of course, we really can't do anything about that except what we are already doing.
Mm-hmm.
That is to negotiate and to make progress toward a resolution.
So the second thing that we can't do anything about?
I guess we could do about the two things we can do something about. They were concerned that we do not have a regular schedule of anticipated rate increases. And of course...
Water and sewer?
Water and sewer.
Okay.
Yeah, and until we know what we have to do and when we have to do it with a consent decree, we're not in a position to know when we're going to have to borrow money to those. And so we really can't decide where we're going to be with that. And then you do have the political considerations always, mm-hmm, with raising water and sewer rates. The third thing is they were concerned about our reserves. And that is something we can do something about in terms of maintaining an 8% operating reserve. Now, if you look at their press release...
They talked about your fund
balance,
too.
They talk about a fund balance, mm-hmm, and they talk about the operating reserve. They'd like to see it at 15%.
Whoa!
I'm just telling you, that is not going to... Even in the last time I remember we had a higher than 8% was during John Hussey's first term, and it was about 10%.
Mm-hmm.
That is just really difficult. You have this huge pot of money that's sitting out there. We are not able to, thankfully, we don't have the power to raise taxes without a vote of the people. So we have a finite source of revenue, so it's really unlikely that we're ever going to get up to 15%. And about a year ago, I went to New York and met with the rating agencies and the bond insurance company, both of them. And then I was under the clear impression that if we if we kept that operating reserve at 8%, then we were going to be okay. And so I was very disappointed in the Moody's deal, because a year ago, well, the last time they rated us, we had uncertainty about the about the consent decree. All these factors were basically the same.
It's nothing new.
And I thought I had done what they were asking me to do. So I was very, very disappointed in the Moody's deal. But we should get Standard & Poor's today.
Okay. What is the status of renegotiating with the EPA? And is Mike Johnson helping you with that? We need a new deal to try to get a little break.
We have sought assistance and obtained assistance from various people, I actually feel pretty comfortable that we will come up with a deal. What I don't want to do is to put us in the same boat that we were in 2014, that is agreeing to something that you could look at and say, we can't do this.
Right.
We want to do a deal that we can actually perform under.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real key on the consent decree. And that's what our argument is to the EPA and the Department of Justice, is that we're willing to do what you need us to do, what you want us to do. We're on the same team there, but we have to be able to do it financially and we have to be able to do it physically. Some of the concern is that we don't have enough contractors to do the work within the time schedule that we have. We just don't have the physical capacity to do that. So it's complicated. I am bound and determined to have that issue done before the end of my first term.
Does that mean a water increase next year? Probably. No mayor wants to sit in that chair and say that might be happening, but it might be.
At some point, we don't think next year.
Okay.
At some point when we get ready to borrow, because about every other year, our anticipation based on what we know now is about every other year borrowing $100 million. And that has to be paid for by rate increases. So we're in an unhappy situation, but I'm trying to make sure it's less unhappy than it otherwise would be.
I don't want to get too wonky, but how much does this bond degradation cost us in paying back the bond interest?
If we are able to maintain the insurance for the bonds, it probably won't cost us anything.
Okay.
If it causes us to lose the insurance, then we probably will pay a little bit. It's still investment grade.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pay a little bit more. But it will be manageable on these. But hopefully, first of all, I am cautiously optimistic about Standard & Poor's. That bond rating, I think, is going to come out today. And hopefully we will maintain with Standard & Poor's. If we do, then we feel pretty good about keeping our insurance.
Okay.
Can you stay with us?
Sure.
We got to take a quick break. Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault in studio. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Report Mayor Tom Arsenault in studio, Mike and McCarty. So, Mayor, in light of this new rating that's just come out this week, and we were talking earlier, we know that the budget you presented to the City Council didn't include raises, but the City Council said that's what they wanted, and you've kind of worked with them. Does this bond rating change that proposal for raises for city employees?
No, because we maintain, our proposal maintains the 8% operating reserve. And I think what happens even with the raises. And we move some money around to be able to do this. And we also increased our revenue estimate, which based upon the oil and gas revenues that we have received this year and that we anticipate receiving next year. Sometimes we underestimate those going into the budget because we want to have those monies available for surprises during the during the year, because we inevitably have surprises during the year. But we are maintaining that 8%. What I think it does, it highlights how important that 8% number is, and hopefully we will not see further changes by the city council, further amendments by the city council that would take us below the 8%, because that would really put some things in jeopardy. It would send a really bad signal to both the rating agencies and the insuring agency for our bonds.
And people are asking this, so I'm going to ask you, and you've heard it. Would it be more responsible, financially responsible, perhaps maybe to do a pay raise for medical and police and fire personnel, rather than all of city government at this point, based on our finances? Is that something in your brain that you're like, oh, are we really doing the right thing?
It really is not, because the city employees, particularly the rank and file employees, people pick up your garbage and dig in the ditches for the water and sewer. Those people have not had a raise in 2 years. They had a modest raise that was really their step increase, about 4% 2 years ago. And it is important for us to be able to maintain a high quality workforce. And we do have pressures. I think at the one of the budget meetings, they talked about in public works, the difficulty finding drivers with CDLs and maintaining those, because we pay less than private sector.
But the public will say, but during the Perkins administration, they got a 13% increase, which is unheard of in the private sector.
Yeah, that was almost 5 years ago.
Yep, I get it. I understand.
But so we're still dealing with the consequences of that today.
Well, we have now absorbed that. It was very difficult. Unfortunately, we still had some ARP money, and we were very cautious with that to make sure that we were able to sustain that. But if you look at that 13% from then to now has not kept up with inflation. And so we think it's important for the city workers to know that we do care a lot about public safety, but we also care about the people who perform the direct services for the citizens of Shreveport.
You also have to be concerned in watching what's happening in Baton Rouge and New Orleans with regard to budget and construct. Are you worried at all that we are, I mean, and you've heard maybe Scott Hughes say, yeah, we've got a few problems in Shreveport, but we're nothing like what's going on in Baton Rouge or New Orleans. We're not even close to being in the bad financial shape that those two cities are in, correct?
We are not. They're really two different kind of circumstances.
Sure.
I think New Orleans is probably some poor financial management and spending habits. Baton Rouge is, I think, part of the results of the St. George phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think you can say that had to do with poor decisions. What I will say is that as long as I am mayor, we're going to do everything we can to maintain the kind of conservative government principles financially that we have been applying. And I will do everything that I can to make sure that we don't get to those circumstances. It's really tempting. You got a pot of $21 or $22 million in that operating reserve. It's very, very tempting to say, well, I'll just take $1 million out. And the problem is, what do you do next year?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we were criticized for is the last 2 years, we have not had a balanced budget on a fiscal year basis. We had some extra, what I consider to be extra surplus. We have used some of that operating reserve, still maintaining it over 8%. To make sure that we were still providing the kind of services that the people of Shreveport expect and deserve. But there's a limit to what you could do. And so if you pull money out of the operating reserve for recurring, that means you're going to have to do it the next year and the next year and the next year. Mm-hmm. Now you're taking bite after bite after bite. Pretty soon there's no pie left.
Not left. Speaking of pie, I know you want a Thanksgiving message in our last 30 seconds. Thanksgiving message to our community?
I am grateful for you, for everybody in Shreveport, for the kind of support that we get. Despite some of the naysayers, most of the time people of Shreveport are very supportive of their government and their community, and I'm grateful that I can be the mayor of a city like Shreveport.
Thanks.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Spoke with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson on Wednesday. Hear what he's got to say coming up right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson joining us. Speaker, good morning.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Sorry, look, I messed up the time earlier.
That's quite all right. You're forgiven. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, too, by the way.
The same to you all. It's going to be a good week. We're getting the whole Johnson crew together, and it's a long time coming. We're looking forward to it.
Ah, nice. The big, beautiful bill. There are going to be a lot of changes that people don't realize, but I'm actually going to get a little bit more in my paycheck after the new year. Is that true?
Yeah, you are. In fact, the average American is expected to receive an additional about $10,000 in take-home pay. You'll see that by next April. You know, here's the thing.
Whoa.
We call it the Big Beautiful Bill for a reason. Yeah, because it's the largest middle-class tax cut in history. It was geared for lower and middle-class earners, but it affects everybody across the economy. We prevented, remember, the largest tax increase in U.S. history. It would have been $5 trillion that descended upon all of our heads if we hadn't gotten this done. But then in addition to that, we added all sorts of new features and pro-growth policies, and among them are reducing the tax burden for everybody. The bottom 20% of earners, by the way, are going to see their federal tax rate fall to the lowest level in 40 years.
Well, that's me.
Yeah. Well, you, me, all of us. Look, we're gonna. Everybody is gonna do better. All boats are gonna rise, and the reason is because we're reducing the tax burden for everybody. Remember, Uncle Sam doesn't have a dollar to spend unless he takes it out of somebody else's pocket.
Are they gonna take less out of my check, or am I gonna get it back in my refund? How's that gonna work?
Yes, it'll be retroactive to 25, so you'll see a little bit of both. Okay. And then on top of that, the reason that all boats rise is that we put in all sorts of incentives for business owners, small business owners, for example. You know, about 95% of the jobs in our region are not for small business owners, right, except for the government officials and soldiers and airmen and all the rest. But small businesses will get a permanent tax deduction, okay? They will immediately be able to write off expensing. So, for example, if they purchase a capital asset, they build a new manufacturing facility, they add on to the business, they can write that off their taxes. So what that does is it spurs on that activity. And we've seen this already in the past when policies like this have been involved, including in the first Trump administration. But this time we're doing it on steroids. And in addition to that, for wage earners and people who work on tips, remember, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime anymore. Seniors, about 50 million seniors are going to get tax relief. So there was all sorts of targeted provisions and policies in the bill. The reason we call it One Big Beautiful Bill is because there's so much in it. But my challenge is politically over the next coming months is to get all my colleagues, my Republican colleagues in the House, to go out and talk about the individual pieces so more and more people understand all the great things that are coming. Most of this gets implemented after the first of the year. So you'll be able to see and feel that, experience that well before that midterm election next fall.
Is it still going to include no tax on Social Security?
Yeah, well, in a way, I can't use that phrase because we couldn't do Social Security in the reconciliation bill because of the archaic rules of the Senate. It's outside the scope of it. However, What we did was we whittled away at individual categories of seniors who are receiving Social Security so that they'll get tax relief sort of indirectly that way. So it's complicated. But yes, the answer is, but the estimate is a little over 50 million seniors will be paying less taxes to the federal government.
Okay, the health care subsidy extensions, that it's been the hot topic. What, explain that in the simplest way you can so people understand it.
Okay, here's the bottom line. The Democratic Party broke American health care. Why do we say that? So they passed Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. We call it the Unaffordable Care Act, okay, because everybody knows from the moment it was signed into law 15 years ago, premiums have skyrocketed. The legislation did exactly the opposite of what they promised it was going to do. Right. There's a lot of reasons for that. But the Democrats' answer now is to keep throwing taxpayer subsidies at a broken system they created. And we think that is very unwise because it just perpetuates the problem. Instead, what Republicans are trying to do is look at the root causes, the root problems that are driving up health care costs. And we got a lot of ideas on how to do that. Now, we've already implemented some of these, okay? When you're talking about the Big Beautiful Bill, we put into that law a provision, for example, on Medicaid. We tackled the problem in Medicaid first. We went after ineligible recipients. So you had illegal aliens and young able-bodied men without dependents who were just siphoning off the system. When we remove them, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that we saved taxpayers $185 billion. We brought premiums down. Now, there was another provision we put in the Big Beautiful Bill that the Democrat senators pulled out. Okay, when I passed it out of the House and sent it over, I had a provision called the CSRs, the cost sharing reduction. That would have driven premiums down for the average American over 12.7%. And the Senate Democrats, in their infinite wisdom, stripped it out of the bill. Okay?
Okay.
So what we're coming forward with is a lot of ideas like that. The CSR program, we've got reforms to like the PBM program that is driving drug costs through the ceiling. We have the expansion of HSAs. There's a lot of ideas that are sort of like low-hanging fruit. And we have got to convince at least a handful of Democrats to come along with us so that we can adjust the premiums, reduce the premiums for all Americans, not just a small subset. But remember, enhanced COVID-era premium that everybody's arguing about affects less than 7% of Americans. Okay, all this, all that hubbub, all the politics, all the everything, it's about less than 7%. We want to go for 100% of Americans paying insurance because we got to fix the broken system. That's what Republicans are committed to.
Now, there are concerns, and you know what the Democrats are saying, that if the subsidies are not extended, that you're going to hurt low-income folks and they're going to be paying more after the new year. Is that true or not?
But they're not telling you the truth. Okay, the Democrats are fighting about this enhanced. Remember, Democrats passed this all on their own without any Republican votes, all these health care things. They added this COVID-era subsidy at that time. And they are the ones that put the extension or the deadline date on it. Okay, so the reason that it ends December 31st is because Democrats decided that they had control of government. They never changed it. All right, but even if that was to expire, okay, even if we can't come to a compromise over the next several weeks, 93% of all subsidized Obamacare enrollees, that's 22.5 million people, are still going to have their premium tax credit.
Okay.
And so. And even if, listen to this, even if the enhanced subsidy is not renewed, most people seeking Obamacare are still going to have access to a health care plan that costs $50 or less every month. Okay, mm-hmm. So they are trying to make a political issue out of this. They don't want a solution. They want an issue to run on next year. And they are scaring people, and they are exaggerating the problem. And, I know y'all are not surprised.
Yeah.
Well, they just say anything.
Right.
They just say anything.
I'm a little bit twisted, and Mike's going to ask you. You know I'm a military mom, so I'm not going to ask you this because it drives me crazy. Mike's got it.
Well, House Speaker Mike Johnson, look, this so-called seditious six that have come out with this carefully orchestrated, very well-crafted video that it's basically fomenting insurrection within our military. Is there going
I've
to be...
I've got a real problem with it. Yeah.
I do, too. And I know they've already talked about going after Mark Kelly, and I say going after, pursuing prosecution. What can be done about this?
Well, here's the thing. I'm a military dad, as you know, Aaron. I mean, my son's a naval academy, right? And he's a sophomore over there, and they're teaching all of the young sailors, airmen, Marine soldiers. They're teaching them that they have to follow orders. Of course, it's essential to our military. And now you have Senator Mark Kelly and five others who are, you know, veterans who come out and make this video, and they're telling young people entering the military, you don't have to obey orders. It's unprecedented in history. It is certainly dangerous, and they're as if an 18 or 19 year old is going to know constitutional law and be able to discern which orders he should follow and which he should not. I mean, it's crazy. So look, it does violate the law. 18 U.S.C. U.S. Code Section 2387 is about activities affecting armed forces in general, and it says that it is a federal crime to advise in U.S. military operations insubordination or disloyalty or mutiny or refusal of duty among the U.S. military. And it goes on. Okay, and there are penalties for this. It is a federal crime for obvious reasons. So Pete Hegseth, Department of War Secretary, is looking into that, in particular with Senator Kelly, because he's still, in effect, under the orders that he's supposed to follow as a member of the military, the chain of command, because he's receiving retirement and he's had some other engagements. So we're going to see what happens with that. I think we do need to make this a big thing, because you cannot have people in authority abusing their platforms and confusing our troops at one of the most dangerous moments in history. I mean, since World War II, guys, this is a dangerous time. We have real adversaries out there, and we need our military operating on all cylinders. We don't need people abusing their platforms to score cheap political points.
Well, I mean, and they're really casing it as, well, not to follow illegal orders. Is that right, going to be their out?
So that's the point. Obviously, if a commanding officer tells you to shoot someone in the street, you know, a civilian, you wouldn't do that, right? But how is a young person in the military supposed to discern what is illegal? And by the way, in every single interview, even on CNN, MSNBC, and all the rest, when they've asked any of the seditious six to name an order they thought was illegal, they cannot name one. And that is the whole point. This is all about politics, and it's disgusting.
Speaker Mike Johnson, happy Thanksgiving to you. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. Thank you a bunch, my friend.
Thank you all. Great to talk to you. God bless.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Mike Johnson, Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
You're listening to
FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Hayride. If you haven't checked, check out the Hayride, an awesome publication online. Scott McKay joining us. Scott, we finally got white smoke out of the LSU Stadium.
Purple.
I think it was purple smoke.
Yeah.
It's the exhaust from the lane train.
Well, I tell you what, honestly, I've never been a huge Lane Kiffin fan.
Me neither.
But I have to admit, I'm excited to get an offensive. They say he's an offensive genius, and he's also bringing his offensive staff over. It's exactly what we needed in Baton Rouge.
Well, this is my thing. I've never liked Kiffin. Ever. I've never liked him, but I've always admitted that, if he was my coach, I'd like him. I've over the last, 10 days or so, I've had to sort of cautiously do a 180 on Lane Kiffin.
Well, I remember Jeremy Shockey. I always hated when he was in New York.
I hate him.
But when he got to New Orleans, you know, he's not so bad.
Yeah. Well, that's what you've done. And it's hilarious, on CBS's football the NFL pregame show, Bill Cowher went off on Lane Kiffin yesterday.
Saw that, yeah.
And wouldn't shut up about, how terrible it is that he's leaving all these players at Ole Miss. And it's like, Let's not be too hasty about that, because he's going to bring a whole bunch of them with him down to Baton Rouge.
Scott, how did this get so messy? What went wrong?
Well, okay, the problem here isn't, it's not LSU, it's not Ole Miss, it's not Lane Kiffin. The problem is the college football calendar. Because what's being completely lost here is that Tulane and North Texas are going to play on Friday, I guess it is, for the American Athletic Conference Championship. And whoever wins that game, in all likelihood, is going to get a bid in the playoffs. And neither Eric Morris at North Texas nor John Summerall at Tulane will be coaching their team in the playoffs, because Summerall just got the Florida job and Eric Morris got the Oklahoma State job. Like, they're leaving too. Okay, so, like, you know, this is not just a Lane Kiffin deal. This is what's – and the interesting thing is that if neither Tulane nor North Texas get in, it'll be James Madison who gets in from the group of five. And Bob Chesney of James Madison is likely going to be the head coach at UCLA and will not coach his team either. So, like, if you're at a school where you're, you know, where coaches do leave and go someplace else.
Which I think there are now six or seven in the SEC that are going to start next year with new coaches.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, when you have this much money and it's this competitive, you're going to have high turnover on coaches because, you know, when it's not working, you have to make a change if you want to, you know, be in the playoff picture and so forth.
Now,
so, like, this is going to happen. And when it does, this is the time of year that it has to happen. Remember, on Wednesday is the National Signing Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. So, like, you have to have a coach in place today, right? Or else, like, you don't have a coach and you're going to lose all of the kids that you spent all this time getting committed for your program. And then on January 2nd, the transfer portal opens. And so you've got, like, I mean, you've got to, by December 1st, you've got to be on the job trying to get recruits and have your staff together and put your program in place, or else you're going to be way behind.
Explain, Scott, something real simple, if you can, to me.
Mm-hmm.
The players that Lane Kiffin can take from Ole Miss, what are the rules? What are the rules with regard to the transfer portal and how many players can come with him to LSU? Are there any rules, or is it wide open spaces now?
The portal opens on January 2nd, if I remember correctly, and I think it goes to the 16th of January. So for 2 weeks, you know, there's like a complete free-for-all. Now, they don't have to sign between the 2nd and 16th of January. They can basically go to whenever the last enrollment date for the spring semester at whatever school they want to land at. But, you know, so the month of December is the pre-portal, right, which is all these kids and their representation talking to schools about NIL money and about, you know, well, if I go to your place, do I get to start? You know, those kinds
of. Do I get a Range Rover? Yeah, right.
Yeah, well,
I heard the quarterback was coming. Ole Miss quarterback coming.
If Trinidad Chambliss is the quarterback at Ole Miss, if he can get an extra year, the chances are very good that he would come. Although, the thing is, there's a bunch of other really high-profile quarterbacks going into the portal, and Kiffin may decide he wants one of them instead, because he's going to be in a position to get pretty much whoever he wants.
Talking with Scott McKay.
As bad a year as Garrett. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, Scott, you talked about the high turnover rate because it is so competitive now. How long does Kiffin have before, you know, the rabid LSU nation, they're going to go, hey, you didn't win a championship this year. How long do you think he has before the hot seat starts heating up?
Well, when Brian Kelly was here, what he said was, judge me in year four. Right. He said, judge me in year four. Well, year four, he was by far the worst year he had. It was like, well, Brian, we've judged you and here's your money. Get the hell out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kiffin's got to show. Look, and LSU's standards are not unreasonable. based on everything you have available to you at LSU, they want you to make the playoffs, which is a 12-team playoff. You've got to be one of the top, essentially top 10 teams in college.
And that's
football.
Not asking too much for LSU.
No, it's not. Your facilities are finished. Your NIL budget is easily top 10, okay? You're paying coaches at a level that's definitely top 10. Your stadium is, you know, your fan base is ranked first, second, or third in every single survey of that. There, all of the trappings of your program are top 10 quality, okay? The quality of the play on the field hasn't been that level since 2019, despite an enormous amount of money spent on coaches to try to fix that. So, like, the standard that Lane Kiffin's going to be held to is make the playoffs more years than not, and that's by no means an unreasonable standard.
Okay. Can we talk ice and NOLA when we get back?
Yeah, sure.
All righty.
Talking with Scott McKay from the Hayride, Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Hayride.com, Scott McKay joining us. Scott, let's shift gears a little bit, talk about sweeping the swamp. President Trump sending ICE agents into New Orleans. I saw a post recently where ICE had gotten a guy. They were cuffing him, and it was in a restaurant. Looks like it was in a kitchen. And the caption was, "Oh, look, this poor kitchen worker. They're just snagging him up." And it, and the ICE agents responded and go, "No, he ran into the kitchen from us. He's a violent offender with a long record." But the narrative is it's all the ICE are the bad guys. It's ridiculous.
That's exactly right. I mean, I hate to say this, but what we found, particularly out of New Orleans with in the advent of Operation Swamp Sweep, is that the local media is just as bad, if not worse, than the national media. They have acted as though ICE were some marauding pirate army that was coming to New Orleans.
Jack-booted thugs.
Every Spanish-speaking citizen of the city. And it's like, what are you talking about? The police chief in Kenner is like the Hispanic part of New Orleans. Okay, like Kenner, south of the airport, is, you know, you might as well be in Houston. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the police chief in Kenner, Keith Conley, was like, "Nobody is calling me complaining about ICE. They're like calling me saying, make sure you help out ICE out, because like the people who are getting carted away by ICE are MS-13 and Trindiaragua. Okay. The gangsters and the cartel thugs are the people that are ICE's focus. And they know who they are because these guys have been brazen for the last 4 years.
Scott, is there genuine outrage on behalf of the public, or is this all orchestrated by Soros and these are well-funded?
It's 90% orchestrated by Soros and 10%, organic, semi-organic outrage by, like, the Trader Joe's
misinformed
clientele. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That are buying into it.
The Karens who, like, can't wait to get a blast of bear spray in their face when they stand in front of an ICE vehicle. I mean, like,
you ain't right. You ain't right, Scott.
Idiot contingent has shown up over and over and over again, you know, you were right. It's orchestrated by these left-wing NGOs with Soros money, no longer with USAID money, but with Soros money. And they have tried to push this because, you know, they're trying to make America into sort of a slightly different version of Western Europe, where the whole country is run on behalf of and for the benefit of third world migrants. And, you know, they went a long way down that road in the 4 years Joe Biden was the resident of the White House. Right. And it needed to be, you know, put back. And 70% of the people that ICE is arresting and deporting are criminals, or they're under a judicial deportation order. Okay. And they like come with those. Well, this mom has been in the country for 35 years. And it's like, yeah. And all that time you never got your immigration status legal. Like, how long are you supposed to be able to flout the law before somebody does something about it?
Let me not pay my taxes for 35 years and let's see what happens, huh?
Yeah. Like, do you think that the local media will go and make a big show of how terrible it is that this poor person who doesn't have any money is getting carted off to jail for not paying their taxes? It's utterly ridiculous.
Scott, if you had to guess, the problems in New Orleans now with crime are keeping a lot of us away. We don't want to go there. What percentage of the crime that's happening in New Orleans can you attribute to some of these illegals and these violent people that don't need to even be here?
Well, probably not as much as I'd like to push the narrative. I don't, like, New Orleans has a very distinct homegrown criminal problem, okay?
Okay, I get you.
So, now, you look at a place like Charlotte or Phoenix or El Paso or San Antonio, and, like, now, there you've got massive, massive arguments that you can make. Less so in New Orleans, but look, every little bit helps, okay? Last year, there was something like 7,500 cars stolen in New Orleans. And the thing about stolen cars is they end up in Mexico. Mm. Like everybody knows this. So, you know, put it this way. It's a not zero part of the problem in New Orleans. And so to send ICE in and go get actual criminals who deal drugs all over the city, will do nothing but help quality of life in New Orleans. And specifically, in the Hispanic community in New Orleans, it will do nothing but help.
Well, and when your industry is tourism and you depend on tourism, I would think you would want all the help you can get to clean your city up.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, look, they just got rid of that stupid consent decree that handcuffed the NOPD and made it a not viable law enforcement office. And so, you know, you actually have the opportunity now that New Orleans can become something of a safe city. And yet, all we're hearing about is, you know, oh, the poor kitchen workers. And it's like, yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah. Thank you.
Give me a break.
Scott McKay with the Hayride. Look, always a pleasure, and we'll talk again soon.
Anytime, y'all. Take care.
Thank you so much, Mike and McCarty. By the way, coming up after the news, bottom of the hour, we're going to talk with Robin Gunard from the Better Business Bureau, and she's going to tell me how to correctly pronounce her last name. She's also going to talk about being Cyber Monday and some scams to watch out for. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Well, it's Cyber Monday, but as good as those deals might look, you might want to be careful. Some scams to watch out for. We're going to talk with Robin Gunard from the Better Business Bureau coming up just after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel apps.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Mike and McCarty. Robin Gunard with the Better Business Bureau. Robin, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for agreeing to jump on with us. Of course, today, a huge online shopping. A lot of folks are shopping online all year, and it's very easy to get caught up in. We see these social media ads. They pop up on Facebook. A lot of them are scams. I've even gotten caught by those before. What can people watch out for?
Well, Cyber Monday is a great time to find online bargains, but it's also prime hunting ground for scammers. I mean, they know thousands of people are eager to hunt for deals.
What kinds of things will they do if I'm online shopping? What are some of the cautions that I need to look for?
Beware of things like 1 hour only sales and pop-up sales and deals.
Okay. And you can know a site is a secure site by, it has to have that S on the HTTP, correct?
HTTPS.
Okay.
On the seller's website. That's correct.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's a good way to.
I saw another tip that came in from Attorney General Liz Merle, who said it's always best when you're shopping online to use a credit card rather than a debit card. Explain why that's important.
Well, a credit card can give you the best protection. They allow you to dispute charges and especially block transactions faster.
Because once a debit card is used, that money's gone out of your account pretty much immediately.
It's gone. That's your money, and a scammer will take it, and your money is gone. So a credit card is the safest way to go.
And we all know we've been on our phones or on our laptops or whatever, and we get targeted because of things we've been surfing for. I'm looking for pots and pans right now, so I'm going to start getting ads sent to me by some great companies, some horrible companies. If you were to tell people the best way to determine whether it's a scamming company, I can go to the Better Business Bureau and look up these companies, right? I can. There are things I can do as a savvy consumer to make sure I'm not being scammed.
Absolutely, you can. And again, you need to go to the website and check out this company.
Now, when you say go to the website, what do you mean? The Better Business Bureau website?
You can, but the seller's website.
Right.
Like if you see an ad on Facebook, don't buy it off the ad. Go to their website and make sure it's legitimate.
Exactly. And make sure you look for that HTTPS.
I also tell people, and this may be just me, I tell people go dig into those websites and look at the reviews. Because often you will see reviews that pop up that go, man, I needed service and this company was horrible to deal with. I mean, go look for those kinds of things before you pull the trigger, right?
Right, right. And on those reviews, you may see one that says, hey, I've been scammed. You want to read those reviews.
The other thing is, you know, I'm going to try to spend my money local with local businesses. And you've got all the information about the local businesses on our Better Business Bureau site here. And we can find out about all the companies here that are doing business with us. That's easy access, right?
It is. It absolutely is. You can go online. You can call our office and we can give you that information.
The fact that people go out and go shop in brick and mortar stores, that those numbers continue to dwindle. How big an impact is that having on your business membership and on the members that are trying to keep their doors open?
It's really hard for them. The small mom and pop stores struggle when it comes to people shopping and waiting to choose Monday, Cyber Monday, to shop. It does have an impact on them.
Robin Gennard with the Better Business Bureau, thank you so much for talking with us this morning and hopefully a little bit wiser today.
Great. Thank you. And have a happy and safe shopping day.
Thank you.
1017 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back with more McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, ironically.
Sound like the movie Wicked.
That didn't sound like it. Ironically. We haven't even gotten the chance. We've been so busy this morning to kind of just catch up.
I know.
Thanksgiving?
You had a good time?
Oh, we had. How about you?
I had pretty mild Thanksgiving. Went to friends, and I actually went to see the new Wicked movie with another friend at the Robinson, which is a beautiful theater, by the way.
Is this the second or third one? I don't even...
It's the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's an incredible movie. And the Robinson's a beautiful place. And so Thanksgiving night was a movie night for me. Then the rest of the weekend, I was just relaxing. I did the pool a couple of days and get some exercise in, trying to do that. And this weather just... Is it like going to be like, did you tell me 41 for the high?
I think I heard Richard LaMoe say 41 for a high today.
Oh, yeah. I'm not ready for that.
Oh,
I'm really
I am.
Not ready for
Thank
that.
You.
Did you have a lot of turkey and goodness with the family and all that fun
yes,
stuff?
Yes, we had a great time.
Okay.
Now, my daughter in Florida didn't get a chance to see her for Thanksgiving, but we did see our son.
Oh, good.
He lives over in East Texas, and so we did get to spend the day, a couple days.
Right, right.
And then my wife's sister lives in Lyndale, so it was real nice. We spent Thanksgiving there, but we are going to get to see my daughter on Christmas.
Yes.
She's to be home Christmas week, and then you're the same thing with your boys.
I'll see one of my boys on Christmas time, but they did text me. My youngest texted me his Thanksgiving spread, and I think he was taking in some Marines that didn't have a place to go. I think he was having them over at his house because, I mean, he had food for miles. It was incredible.
Oh, that's cool.
And then my oldest texted me his grocery receipt, which was $718. And I was like, holy cow. And he said, don't worry about it, Mama. It was taken care of. The bill was taken care of. And then he shows me what they ate. 2-inch thick steaks. They're out at a, he and his buddies are out at a, like, it looks like a park. And they grilled these big old steaks.
Oh, how awesome is that?
And they were sitting around with their beer and their, they had a couple of sides, I'm sure, but they had these monstrosity steaks. And I thought, you know what? He's enjoying life. He's
yes.
enjoying. So they had a good thing. Both of them had a good, and that's what matters when you're a grown up. It's like, are the kids good? Are they happy? I'm sorry that I didn't get to be with either of them.
Sure.
But I'll have some Christmas time with one of them, so I'm excited about that.
But being in the military, both of them, it's,
yep.
you understand that.
Yes, I understand it. And, you know, I have my Marine shirt on today, and I was wearing it somewhere in public the other day, and a lady walked up to me, and she said, thank you so much for your service. She goes, because the family served, too. And people don't realize that. You know, I don't get to see my kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, whenever I want. I don't get to see them on holidays, typically. They're working. A lot of times they're working. So anyway, it was a good long holiday. It was nice to be off for 4 days. It really was.
It was the fastest. I texted you last night going, seriously?
Yeah.
That's the fastest 4 days I've ever experienced in my life.
Also just got a text. A friend said, don't forget your third kid, Bo. He had a lot of ham and turkey on Thanksgiving. I bet he did.
All right, LSU got a new coach. We'll talk about that after the news. Top of the hour, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarthy. FM 710 KEEL. By the way, Ruben's off today.
You're not doing a bad job.
So,
and you're doing traffic too. You're doing everything over
there. I know.
There.
Gary's out today. Ruben's out today. So mm-hmm. I've never done traffic before.
Not bad.
And I'm running this B-52 console over here.
People stuck on the Jimmy Davis Bridge coming from Bossier into Shreveport.
I got it in the traffic.
Mess. I know you did. It's a mess up there. So just be careful. Marty Smith with the ESPN. Has been camping out in Oxford at Ole Miss.
All day, Saturday, they'd cut in every break during a game, like at halftime. Let's check in with Marty.
Nothing
Still
yet.
Waiting.
Waiting on a meeting, having a meeting with the team. But.
You know, apparently that meeting got a little contentious.
Well, Lane was not allowed in the meeting with the Ole Miss team.
Right.
He was not allowed. He met with the athletic director, and that meeting maybe got a little sideways. But you got to give Marty credit, because as Lane was leaving Ole Miss, Marty off-roaded his truck around the fire trucks
Did he? Yeah.
to go get to Lane before he jumped on a plane. And he got an exclusive interview with Lane where they talked about the decision to leave Ole Miss.
And now, cross your fingers. I'm hoping this works. Here we go.
You know that this was a very challenging, difficult day. You know, we went through a lot last night with Keith Carter trying to figure out a way, you know, to make this playoff, you know, run work and be able to coach the team. And at the end of the day, that's his decision. And I totally respect that. I understand that decision. And, you know, so I just totally wish the team the best of luck. Wish that I was coaching, but understand that it was a very challenging position for him and the Chancellor to be in. And totally respect that. So, you know, just really hope they play really well and go win the national championship.
What drew this decision out so long?
Just, it was really difficult. This has been a really special place. 6 years here. I know that there's a lot of feelings and emotions right now around. I hope when they settle down that there's an appreciation about what we were able to do here and having, you know, the best run that's ever been done in the history of the school and brought some exciting times. So I'm so appreciative to the people of Oxford and the relationships that I developed here. And, you know, when I spoke at my dad's funeral, he moved 17 times. And I realized when all the people, I got all the letters, calls, people showed up from around all those different spots, NC State, all the different spots he coached. And they said he was able to impact them and how much that meant to them. And so I've really strived since that day to really try to impact people and help people through life, through my journey. So just prayed a lot and made a family decision and, you know, hopefully get a chance to go, you know, impact a whole new set of people.
I understand you didn't attend the meeting today. Why not?
You know, I totally respect Keith's decision.
So that was his decision?
Yeah. He asked me not to come to the meeting and said I couldn't come, but which I totally understand, you know. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, you know, we're trying to find a way, you know, to make this work and coach the team and give the team the best chance to win. But I also, you know, he's got a job to do, and like he said, he has to live here. So, like he said, maybe all the national people understand why he should let me coach, but he has to live here, and it's a little different when you're the AD. So totally respect that, and Keith has been amazing to us over the 6 years.
Why was LSU the right choice for you?
Yeah, just, you know, there was something in me. This was really hard. My heart was here, but I just, you know, I talked to some mentors, Coach Carroll, Coach Saban, you know, and especially when Coach Carroll said, man, your dad would tell you to go, man, take the shot. You know, take the shot. You've accomplished a lot here. You know, I always hated how we only gave 1 year to Tennessee and left. I really hated that feeling of that, you know, even though it was an exciting year. But, you know, I think that we gave a lot to this program and to the city and, you know, some of the most historic wins in this stadium that we've ever had and best regular season in the history of the school. So I feel proud of that part, but it just became time, you know. I talked to God and he told me it's time to take a new step. It's a new chapter.
Some people will look at this and say, okay, it is the best season in the history of the school, the best era in the history of the program, a playoff team with an opportunity to win a national championship. So what does LSU offer in your mind that Ole Miss doesn't?
I don't know all that. It just was something that I prayed on and made a family decision. And maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. But I think a lot of times, you know, you just go prove things right. And that's what we're going to do when we get there.
Last thing. I know this has been an emotional time for you. What are the specific emotions that you'll be watching your team on television playing in the college football playoff?
I don't know that. There's so many emotions today, and it was so rushed. You know, this isn't a normal job, and so I'm not complaining about the job. You know, this is a very abnormal job that you don't get a chance to just go places, look around, make decisions, you know, maybe start in 4 months or something when you relocate. So this is one of those strange jobs that you got to get on a plane and go. So I hate that part of it, and but it is what it is.
One last thing that I meant to ask a moment ago. What role did your desire to bring some offensive staff with you or some staff members with you play in the decision taking a moment?
In decision of what?
In the decision to be finalized.
Oh, yeah, there was no, I guess there's a narrative because I had to talk to the players about that someone pumped a narrative in them that there was an ultimatum to coaches or something like that they had to go. There was nothing. Every coach has their own decision to make, and I would never give them ultimatums like that. And so those are all their own individual decisions.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, man. All right. See you soon.
Bye, bud.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Hold on, let me turn this down. Where's Ruben?
Ruben's getting his time in.
I know.
He left some days on the table last year, and I didn't like that.
No. And I said, I don't like that either.
I don't like anybody doing that. You earn the days. If you can't carry them over, I want him to take them. So.
You've got some scheduled after, right, like Christmas Eve?
Yeah,
after?
Christmas Eve's Eve. I'm gone for a few days, and I'm looking forward to just kind of relaxing. You're going to be gone the Christmas week part of it, so we're going to and that is the time of year where that happens. It just does. It's one of those things.
Well, we've got use it or lose it, so.
Exactly.
Got to get the days in. So that's hopefully Ruben. Hopefully he's still asleep.
I'm hoping he is still asleep. And, you know, I've got the Johnny Carson schedule, so I get a lot of time off. So. I got to get it all in. You know, I reposted something this weekend, over the holiday weekend, that stirred a lot of people up, and it stirred them up again. And the only reason I did it is because it is a dilemma in our town. It's about homeless folks and where they can go. And when we have a day like today, when the high is only going to be, 41 degrees,
right,
and it's rainy, where
just
do you go?
Just kind of nasty today.
Yeah, where do you go on a day like this? And there were a lot of people complaining about homeless folks. You know, at Columbia Park, they have that big pavilion in the middle of the park.
Oh, yeah.
And then under the pavilion, they've got picnic tables. Well, there were homeless folks have been using those picnic tables to sleep on at night, sometimes during the day. And the bathroom's been locked for a long, long time. So the complaint in the park was that they were using the bathroom, on the side of the building. And then folks were like, it's not comfortable bringing my kids out there. And watching, grown people use the bathroom on the side of a building or whatever. And I understand the bathrooms probably got vandalized so they're not usable anymore. And that's a damn shame. I hate that. But
what's the reasoning for locking the bathrooms if it's a public park?
Well, I think they're not usable. Again, I think vandals got to them, and so they're not workable. They don't work anymore.
Okay.
So they just lock them up. And the people that live around the park, they are the ones who have typically raised the most concern because it's not that they object to the homeless people being there. It's the fact that they object to them using the restroom and being unsanitary, right there near their home when they have children that they'd like to take to the park. And when I post things like that, people go crazy and like, what are we supposed to do, Keel News? Where are these people supposed to go? Well, there are places for them to go and that are not, public parks. There are shelters for them. But I know, and I'm not stupid, I know a lot of these folks don't want to go to those organized places. Maybe they have mental health issues. Maybe they have drug issues. I get that. And I know that the Hope Connections and a lot of groups send people out to try to help and try to get them the help they need.
There are a lot of options available for homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Here locally, there
you
are
bet.
A lot of options available. The problem being a lot of homeless don't want to comply with the rules or the requirements that some of these options might have.
So what's happened at Columbia Park is that the residents have, they've launched a campaign to get police to come out and run them off. Because the park closes, I believe, at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And so the gates are shut. But, you can walk into Columbia Park from any side. You just can't bring a car into the parking lot. But you can walk in from any side and go lay down on the picnic table and take a nap. And that's what's been happening. And so residents are now calling the police to come run the homeless people off. At what point do you start arresting them? You're trespassing. You don't have room in a jail for that. There's nobody that's got room in jails to pick up people for trespassing. So, people think we're harsh by putting that kind of information out there, but we want to help find solutions too. What is the solution for somebody who doesn't want to go to a shelter, who won't comply with rules, but who is out among the elements and trying to get out from under the rain, trying to get under that pavilion, trying to get behind the brick wall where you can block the wind. I don't know.
But you can't help somebody that doesn't want to help themselves. You can't make their decisions for them.
Right. And the problem is, when do their actions impose on me and my life? Mm-hmm. And at what point do I have to say, what you're doing is now imposing on the public? You're urinating in public. You're defecating in public. Right. You're whatever you're doing in public. And you can't do that. That's where you have to say, what do you do with those people? I have compassion. You have compassion. But at what point does what you're doing impose on the rest of us? And we have to find a solution for that. And I've got the biggest heart in the world. I would like to find a home for all these folks. But there are folks that would like to take their kids out there without seeing a guy drop his drawers and go pee on the wall. You know, no, I mean, I'm making it as simple as I can.
Exactly. And you're exactly right.
That's become quite the problem. And it's not just Columbia Park. It's downtown Shreveport. Mm-hmm. You walk through downtown, you'll see them in lots of the, what do you call that, right in front of businesses. They'll be in the vestibule where they're covered. They're all over. And more outreach, I don't know. I think we do a pretty good job of that. I think our people do. We just have to find a solution that's a better answer for everybody so that their actions don't impose on us.
Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
By the way, amidst all the news from the weekend, you might have missed, there was a mass shooting in Stockton, California. 4 people dead, 3 children. Not 18, 19, children.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk with Tom Gresham from Gun Talk, heard on Sundays right here on Keel, coming up just after the break. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. My headphones just went nuts. From Gun Talk, heard every Sunday here on Keel. Host Tom Gresham joining us. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Tom, if I were to ask you, what states have the strictest gun laws, what would you say?
Well, you have a number of states that have really strict, repressive gun laws. Massachusetts, California. And weirdly enough, and I know where you're going, weirdly enough, they tend to be the states that have a lot of crime, which, of course, we keep saying, guess what? Gun control laws don't and never have reduced crime.
Tom,
That only the criminals are allowed to have guns now. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, if you keep making it harder and harder for people to protect themselves, then they are mandated to be vulnerable against criminal attack.
Sorry, Aaron.
Let me just say, this is Stockton, California. It's a horrific mass shooting where an 8, a 9, a 14-year-old were killed, a 21-year-old also killed, 11 others wounded in what was apparently a targeted attack in a state where I probably can't bring my guns. They've got tough gun laws, so they won't have these kinds of shootings, Tom.
It never works. It never has worked. It never will work. It defies logic to think of it. But look, you know, the thing that people are only now starting to say out loud, and those of us who study this all the time knew immediately, this is not some random thing. This is a criminal attack by probably organized criminals, probably gangs, probably drug-related. And, you know, there's another storyline here that we don't know yet. But for the rest of us to think, oh, gee, it was a birthday party that a shooting broke out. No, it was just a gathering of people who a rival gang or some other entity decided, oh, we've got them all lined up. But, and I think maybe to your point, Aaron, it is horrific beyond belief to think people would go in and shoot children. Mm. It tells you how bad they are, how callous and how willing they are to murder anybody. And my takeaway from that is, if you do not get training, if you're not carrying a gun, you're just a damn fool.
And the problem is, at that party, the laws in California probably don't let you have a gun at a party like that, at an event like that, I bet. Because they want to be tough on guns, you know?
I will bet you that a bunch of people at that party were carrying guns because they were probably members of a rival gang.
Part of the problem, too.
We're going to see what we'll find out. It's pure speculation on my part based on nothing more than watching this for 50 years. But, you know, I'm guessing that's what they're going to find out.
And I would bet, too, and I'd stake my, you know, reputation on it, that the people that shot him up don't legally have the right to even own guns.
Well, that's a great point. They're going to find that, gee, these are people who are prohibited and are not allowed to legally own a gun. Oh, guess what? That doesn't matter either.
You mean that felon was carrying a firearm? He wasn't supposed to be. He's a felon.
He wasn't following the law.
Now, you know, of course, the one thing is, you do have the means, the prosecutors do have the means to not have these people shooting people, because if they're in prison, they don't shoot people at a birthday party.
Exactly. So the whole myth of stricter gun laws will stop mass shootings, I know you want to say nasty words about that, but it's simply malarkey.
The reality is, no gun control law in the United States has ever reduced crime. Not a single one. They just don't work. And look, we can talk about the greater societal thing and all the rest of it, but I like to drill it down. You know, when we're talking on gun talk, I say, look, people, you can't fix society. You can't fix these bigger issues. And you know, you can talk about passing gun laws and all the rest of it. The reality is, you have to take care of yourself and you have to take care of your family. And what are you going to do about that? And complaining about it on social media doesn't count as being effective, people.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Tom, we're talking with Tom Gresham, host of Gun Talk. And yet, Tom, after an incident like this, the first thing the left will say is, well, we need more gun control. We need more gun laws. I mean, that's the first thing they say. It's almost comical.
Well, it is comical because California is like the Garden of Eden for gun control. They have everything they want, except the one they really, really want. Occasionally, they'll actually say it out loud. They'll slip, which is a total confiscation of guns. I mean, they want you to have no guns. But, of course, then again, the criminals still won't comply, so they'll be the only ones to have guns. And I go back to, what are you prepared to do about it? What are you going to do to protect yourself and your children? You know, are you going to make a commitment? Or are you just going to wring your hands and go, isn't this terrible? Oh, my goodness. They should do something about it. No, there's no they. Mm-hmm. There's just you. What are you going to do to protect your children? What are you going to do to protect yourself?
And I know personally from folks that have moved to California, probably against their will, but have moved for job-related, and they've had to leave guns here. Uh-uh. They've had to leave them in Louisiana because they can't take them to California, the guns they own.
Aaron, I have been offered very good jobs in places where I couldn't take my guns. There's no amount of money on the planet that would make me take a job and move to a place like that. None.
My daughter, when she lived in Dallas, somebody broke into her backyard through the fence and tried to get into her house. And when the police did arrive, my daughter was in the backyard and she's holding her Glock in her hand and her two dogs. And she said, the policeman, she goes, Dad, I have to tell you, the policeman looked at me and he says, you've got a Glock. You look like you know what you're doing with. You got two big dogs. Your dad taught you right. I said, I'll take that credit because I have taken her to the range. She knows how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And taking responsibility. It's like, you know, there is no, they should do something or I will call, you know, people who say, well, I have a phone. I'll call 911. I'm sorry. You're offloading your responsibility to protect yourself. Do not you know, send this to somebody else and expect them to take responsibility for making you safe. You are the one who's responsible for keeping yourself and your family safe. Own it. Do it. Mm-hmm. Be responsible. Go get the training. Get the gun. Carry it when you can and everywhere you can, and be responsible for your safety, because no one else is.
Yeah, it just made me crazy when I saw that today, and I thought about you, so I was reaching out. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're going to find out this was not your average, you know, deal where people suddenly got surprised. Everybody knew who the shooters were. They all knew each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tom Gresham, host of Gun Talk, heard on Keel every Sunday. Tom, thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Be safe.
We'll talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCart.
Of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Hello. Hello. What are you doing?
Shopping over here. You have to finish things up.
You're shopping.
It's Cyber Monday. Come on now. I'm doing a little shopping.
Are you, do you take advantage of the Cyber Monday?
Here's what I'm doing. I'm looking. There are a couple of things I want. And so I hone in on those things, and then I go see, okay, who's got a deal on them? You know, I'll go look at it in each store and go, hey, does Macy's have a deal? Does Kohl's have a deal? Whatever. And then I'll go, and there's these comparison sites, too. Well, I'll go look, you know, hey, what's the comparison for the Calphalon cookware set or whatever it is? And then they'll list, here's the best deals on Cyber Monday. And so, yeah, I've been looking at that, and I'm maybe pulling the trigger, maybe not. I'm not sure.
Well, my wife and I made the decision. We're giving each other a new fence.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like, we've got to get their fence repaired. It's a cedar fence around the yard.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It's 15 years old or whatever, so it's like, let's do that. And those things are not freaking
cheap. If I had to line up my most practical friends in the world, y'all might be in the top three. I think y'all probably would be in the top three.
Okay, my wife would go,
number one.
Me, not him.
Not him.
Me.
Scratch him off your list.
And I can't argue with her.
Yeah, just looking at some of the things.
Although, after 40 years, some of it has rubbed off.
Okay,
yeah,
which is a good thing.
I think so.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, a fence is necessary. And it's expense.
It's like buying tires, though. You know, it's like buying tires.
I mean, you know. Yeah.
But she doesn't want you
to go get her jewelry. She's going to take it back.
She doesn't want,
anyway.
Yeah. Very practical.
Tomorrow.
And that's fine, though.
Missy Setters is going to join us tomorrow. What are the Independence Bowl?
How's it looking?
Yep. What's looking good?
Is it shaping up?
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.